is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Head Start Basketball's cutthroat gameplay program returns on Tuesdays in October at the Strongsville Rec Center. Boys and girls in grades 5 through 10, you won't want to miss this one. Come out and join us and get prepared for your season with the best live-action skill development game anywhere. You can register at www.headstartbasketball.com.
I think sometimes we make a t-shirt or we put a hashtag out or we do all this stuff, and it's really not anything more than what it is on that t-shirt. And we can put it on that t-shirt, but that doesn't mean it's our culture. And just because we say it, that doesn't mean that's who we are. So really trying to live that. And as the older I've gotten, the more I realize that I've got to try to live that as well. I can't hold them to any different standards than myself. So I think being authentic and really having a culture that you can grasp, that you can see, that you can feel, instead of just a poster on the wall, is important.
Lee Swanson is in his first year as the girls' head varsity basketball coach at Bunker Hill High School in Claremont, North Carolina. Lee started his coaching career as an assistant for the boys' varsity at South Caldwell High School for 2 seasons before taking over as the head coach for 6 years. He left South Caldwell to take over the boys' program at Bunker Hill, where he spent the past 4 seasons prior to taking the girls' job this past spring. Lee has 11 total seasons as a varsity head coach and was named the Conference Coach of the Year for the Northwestern Foothills 2A Conference last season as Bunker Hill's boys' varsity coach. Lee has attended the Jay Billis Skills Camp the past 2 summers as part of the Coaches Development Program, where he has learned from Jay and many other top coaches from across the country. Make sure you subscribe to the Hoopheads podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star rating and review. Believe it or not, those ratings help your friends and colleagues find the show. If you really love what you're hearing, please recommend the Hoopheads pod to someone and get them to join you as a part of Hoopheads Nation. Open up your favorite note-taking app and get ready to learn from Lee Swanson, head girls varsity basketball coach from Bunker Hill High School in Claremont, North Carolina. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome from Bunker Hill High School in Claremont, North Carolina, Lee Swanson. Lee, welcome to the podcast.
Hey guys, appreciate you having me.
Absolutely excited to have you on. You and I got a chance to meet this summer back in June at the Jay Billis Skills Academy. It was a lot of fun connecting with you there and hanging out as part of the coaches development program. So excited to have you on and get a chance to learn more about you, your background, and your program that you have down there at Bunker Hill with the girls. So let's start with you as a kid. Go back to the time in your childhood when you first got into basketball and talk a little bit about your first experiences with the game.
I guess basketball kind of grew up was my favorite sport. My dad was probably more of a baseball player. But you know, he knew that's what I wanted to do. So he didn't push me towards, what he wanted to do, kind of let me do my thing. And, I guess early on you have some success. I think anytime you can be decent at something, you tend to gravitate towards it. And was big. I probably played AU basketball when I was, in the time I got to middle school. I was a little bit of a late bloomer. I'm pretty tall, but I wasn't tall until about sophomore year. So, struggled with, hey, I was a pretty good player, and then I became a pretty average player, probably could have worked a little harder, and but just fell in love with the game and even knew at a young age I wanted to get into coaching.
What did you like about basketball compared to baseball? Since your dad was a baseball guy, what was it about basketball that you preferred over baseball at that time?
Yeah, I just think basketball, it's you go to the gym, you got a ball, and you get a group of people. It's up and down. Everybody touches the ball. I know some players touch it more, but to me, it's just a little bit more fun, a little bit more fast paced. Probably I wasn't very good at baseball, so that didn't help.
that's definitely true. We tend to gravitate away from things that we're not very good at. That's for sure.
When you don't have anywhere you can't catch a fly ball, and you didn't like fielding grounders, there's not a whole lot of room for you.
But were you good at picking dandelions? That's the real question.
I wanted to try to hit the baseball. I didn't. The field part I wasn't much for, and they didn't have a DH at that point, so I was limited.
Yeah, it's interesting because baseball, I have this conversation with people a lot about youth baseball and how, you go to a youth baseball practice, and to your point, people, the only thing kids want to do is hit. Nobody wants to field grounders. Nobody wants to shag fly balls. And yet if you go to the average 8-year-old baseball practice, maybe each kid gets to hit for 5 minutes if they're lucky.
And then you go to a basketball, or even like, I never played any soccer at all growing up. Kind of like what you said, when you're not good at something, you just stay away from it. And that certainly was how I felt about soccer. But you go to a soccer practice or a basketball practice, or even lacrosse now is becoming popular here in Cleveland. And those sports are so active, and there's everybody's involved, and people are moving around and doing things. And then you go and watch a baseball practice, and you're like, I can't believe any kid wants to stick around and play baseball. Cause it seems like baseball is a game that has to grow on you. You really have to understand, I think, the nuances of it to appreciate it. And for kids, especially in the world the way it is today, with the limited attention spans and YouTube and everybody's phone in their pocket, it just feels like baseball is a sport that's going to continue, I think, to struggle to get kids to participate. Whereas these other sports that are more dynamic, like basketball and soccer, lacrosse, I think are much more popular with kids today, for sure.
I think I've grown to appreciate baseball more. I've been around two guys. Coach Curtis retired not too many years ago. Coach Chester took his place. Then we've got a young coach on staff, Coach Beard, who's wise beyond his years. And those guys have taught me an appreciation, just listening to them talk about the game and kind of the mental part of it. I was probably just too immature to be able to focus, but I've probably come to appreciate it more now that I'm older. And we're really solid in baseball year in, year out. So I will say I've come to appreciate it more with age.
Yeah, I think it's a game, like I said, that you have to understand it in order to really appreciate it. And I know for myself, I always enjoy – Jason over here really loves the Indians, so he's keeping tabs on what's going on a nightly basis, and I don't follow it nearly as closely. But I do enjoy playoff baseball. I think, like you said, part of it is just the understanding of the strategy and knowing, and it feels like when you're in the – postseason with baseball, that every pitch matters. And during the regular season with 162 games, it's just, man, I can't watch it. It's brutal.
I agree.
All right. So what was your favorite memory of playing high school basketball? What's one or two things that stand out to you from your high school basketball career that are going to always stay with you?
I think, it's really hard to think back how many points you scored or kind of your personal accomplishments, but I think you remember your teammates, the friendships you developed, just the time you spent together. Honestly, things like team camp, those things are very, very important. And then, you have a few, I remember, I think I hit like six or seven threes one night, and I remember that, obviously, but I would say the relationships I developed. Matter of fact, the guy that coached me in high school is still a coach today, not too many counties down, and we still talk and scrimmage. So it's kind of stuff you build forever instead of even in the short term.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you still have teammates from those years that you talk to on a regular basis?
Some. Ironically, some of my better friends have moved up and making a lot more money than me in other places. But, some of those I've talked to. Some of them have got kids in the area, and some of them – are a little bit older than me, and they've got some kids coming up. So it's, I definitely stay in contact and talk about those times.
Yeah. It's difficult sometimes as we get older. I know that, once you have a family and you're coaching and lives get busy, and then all of a sudden it becomes more difficult sometimes to stay in touch with people. But I think the one thing that I've found, and I don't know if you feel the same way, is that no matter how long you've been apart from somebody who you went through one of those experiences with on a team, it always feels like when you get back together that it instantly comes back, and you may not have seen them or talked to them for 5 years or 10 years or whatever the case might be. And yet, because of those, the intensity of some of the experiences that you went through, I think it's easy to reconnect with people that you may not have seen for a while. And that's what I find, because there's some teammates that I stay in contact with that I'm on a semi-regular basis, but then there's others that, I'll run into at an alumni game, or I'll see, or, we'll talk once every couple of years, and it still just feels like, oh yeah, we were tight back then, and we continue to be that way today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think relationships is probably the one thing, as I've got older and you're able to, you don't even know you're doing it when you're young, but it's the one thing I probably value as much as anything. Winning's fun, and accomplishing goals and chasing goals, those things are fun, but seeing people, what they accomplish, and being able to connect and see them grow, I think that's even much cooler than winning and losing.
Yeah, there's no doubt that those relationships, like you said, I think you made a great point when you talked about how you don't remember the wins and losses. You don't necessarily remember how many points you scored. But what you do remember are the times with your teammates and those relationships that you're able to build. And I think that as we've gone on in the last 15 to 20 years, I think that from a coaching standpoint, coaching has really evolved in that direction, where if you go back to the late 80s, early 90s when I played, I'm not sure that there were a whole lot of coaches. There were some, but I think there were a whole lot of coaches that were more of the my way or the highway, and you're going to do things, and it's sort of you're my player, you know, I'm your coach, and that was kind of where the relationship ended. And I think, thankfully, we've started to go, you know, pretty strongly in the other direction, where almost everybody that we've talked to universally talks about how important those relationships are. And so you mentioned your relationship with your high school coach, and that because he's still coaching, you have an opportunity to set up some scrimmages with him and be involved. So what do you remember from when you played? Is there anything that from his coaching style, or anything that you remembered as a player that you still think about today as you're coaching your teams? Can you point to any one or two things maybe that you took from him that you still incorporate into your coaching today?
Yeah, I mean, I can still remember, you know, it's funny how you remember little things, you know, how to flare off a screen, when to curl off a screen, help side defense. Coach Absher wasn't a big yeller. And actually, my JV coach, until he retired, actually coached with me the last couple of years at Bunker Hill. So I've had a little two-prong there. But you kind of take some things. I remember what we won a JV championship with Coach Sears, who'd helped me the last couple of years. And so you remember those things. I think more than anything, what I take is the appreciation of what they taught you. You know, I think sometimes you forget how you learned the game. You just know that you kind of did as a kid, but you don't really know how. Coach Bound was an AAU coach of mine. I ended up coaching against him my first few years. So, you know, it's just neat, and you have an appreciation for what you learned from some of those guys, you know, through the experiences you had with them.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that you make a great point there about forgetting sometimes how we get to the point that we get to, whether it's as players or whether it's as coaches. And if you think back to, like you described, the time when you're with your coach and you're a player and you're going through and you're doing the things that you do, and it may not always sink in right there in the moment, and it may end up being something that you don't remember until years later, and you're like, oh yeah, I remember how coach used to teach that, or I remember how he showed us how to curl off a screen or flare off a screen, like you mentioned. And it's great that you can have somebody that has such a good impact on you, and that you're able to build that relationship that still is strong today, and that you can, A, remember what you did when you were back playing for them, and then B, that you have an opportunity to actually be able to compete since there, you know, he's still coaching. That's really got to be a unique situation there. So you mentioned that from the time you were young, even when you were playing at a young age, that you always knew that you eventually might want to get into coaching. So can you talk a little bit about that, and what made you think as you were a young player that, hey, at some point I want to stay involved in the game and be a coach? Because sometimes that doesn't hit people until later when they're all done playing, where they're so focused on being a player that coaching really isn't on their horizons. But it sounds like for you it was. So talk about why you think that was, and what made you think that you'd be interested in coaching as you went on in your career.
You know, my dad was big into sports, and I mean, he coached me up until a certain point. It's funny how you remember things. You know, my dad was my all-star basketball coach up until I was about 12. And, I remember, you know, he coached us on like a Monday night, and he had the cancer surgery on the next night, and somebody else had to coach us. So there's a lot of things you remember that basketball kind of, you know, teaches you about life. And, but I just thought it was a cool profession. Something my dad did. I love sports. I love basketball. I probably figured out pretty soon I wasn't going to be getting paid to play it. so everybody else that might listen to this is probably going, yeah, we could have told you that. But you know, I did have a chance to play some junior college if I wanted to do that. And I eventually moved on from that pretty quickly and went into coaching, did some AAU stuff. But I just think it's a really cool thing. Originally, this is kind of unique since we're doing this today. But originally, I was going to teach P.E., because who wouldn't want to be a PE teacher? But when September 11th happened, I was a junior in high school, and I just got really interested in history. So I actually teach history and coach basketball. So it's kind of 9/11 kind of detoured me from PE to history. So that's kind of a neat story.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you changed as a result. Obviously, I mean, thinking about the – obviously, we're, you know, recording here on the anniversary of September 11th, and for anybody who was alive at that time, just an unbelievable moment in our country's history. And I don't think anybody who was around that day will ever forget where they were when that happened. And interesting that it had that kind of impact on you to change sort of your career thought of what you were going to do and move in another direction. And I know that, you know, I started out teaching elementary school and teaching all the subjects, and then I've flipped the other way and now I'm teaching phys ed. But if you look back on that, are you happy with that decision? Did history end up being something you're like, man, I really made the right decision as you went forward?
Yeah, I like it. You know, some days when I'm lesson planning, maybe would have been a little bit different, but sure, I think it gives you opportunity for kids to see a little bit different light. And, you know, you kind of get to develop relationships with every kid, and you get a bigger student section that way when it comes to basketball, and you get to be a little bit more interactive. But, you know, I'm a big reader, so I still read some history along with a lot of leadership stuff. So I think it kind of balances you out. You kind of, and most, I mean, guys tend to go towards social studies. I don't know why that is. We just kind of gravitate towards that. You like to read about heroes and people that do stuff. And honestly, it brings some pretty good stories that you can give your team on, you know, how to build a team, because there's a lot there from history.
No question about that.
Yeah, I would have taught social studies, but in Ohio, it's really hard to get a social studies job. So that's why I teach math, because that's just the way I was. And it's funny that you said that lesson. You probably wouldn't have as many lesson plans, because I'm pretty sure that's what made Mike go to PE, was the lesson plan.
If there's one thing I'm definitely not teaching, it's math, because I can add, subtract, and maybe do a little multiply, and it stops about there.
I know when I was teaching all the classroom subjects, my least favorite to teach was probably reading. I enjoyed the science and social studies because I always felt like you could get into more discussions with kids. And just like you said, then that allowed you to kind of build a relationship with them and kind of see where they were coming from. And that was always interesting to be able to have those deeper conversations in the classroom. And, you know, that's one of the things I do miss, you know, being in PE. You don't have that same opportunity to interact with kids in that way. And we're interacting with them, obviously, differently, but I do miss some of those discussions about things that I would learn in my life outside of school. And then to be able to bring those into the classroom, I do miss that. And I think that's probably one of the things that as a history teacher that you get to do on a pretty regular basis. What are you reading right now? Is there any book recently that you're reading or something that you're reading right now that you think would be good for coaches that might be out there listening?
Honestly, I've got a couple. I kind of binge on reading in the summer, because you know how it is when you get
right. Absolutely. School.
But I read The Culture Code. I read Atomic Habits. I reread Raise Your Game. Actually, ordered a team set. Our kids don't know we're reading that yet, but they'll figure it out soon enough.
Nice.
When they listen to this episode, they'll figure it out. There you go.
That's right. That's right. But Atomic Habits was by James Clear was terrific. I'm trying to kind of go back in there and mold some stuff. Maybe, you know, for me, I don't exercise as much as I want. I'm probably on my phone more than I want to be, even though it's not as much as our kids. And thought Culture Code was great. You guys were talking about coaches my way or the highway. One of the first things they talk about building a team is being vulnerable. That's like the number one thing for teams to be close, is they have to be able to be vulnerable to share with one another. It has to be safe, because they can open up and they can trust one another. And so there's always trying to figure those things out. But I would definitely recommend those three.
Yeah, those are all good. Those are all good books. Obviously, we've had Alan on the podcast. He's been on with us twice, and James Clear came on with us to talk about Atomic Habits, and that was a fantastic. Both of those books are just tremendous for anybody out there who hasn't read them. Whether you're a basketball coach, whether you're a parent of a basketball player, or you're a player yourself, if you want to make changes in your life and just become a better version of yourself, both of those books do that very, very well. I actually just ordered the Atomic Habits journal to keep track of. It's like a dot matrix thing. It just came in the mail today. So I'm looking forward to cracking that open maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow, and kind of looking and seeing how I can change some habits that I have to make myself a better person. I think that's something that as coaches, again, it goes back to what we talked about a little earlier. I think that it's become much more, I don't know if fashionable is the right word, but just this idea of having a growth mindset and improving yourself. If I think back to myself when I was 23, 24 years old, I don't think I looked at it the same way, or maybe it wasn't just as popular in the mainstream media at that time. But now I think that there's just so many opportunities if you're a coach or you're a teacher or whatever, for you to be able to read something, look at something, listen to something, and to grow in whatever it is that you're doing. And those two books, I think, certainly are ones that are very, very good. The Culture Code, I have not read, so I got to get to that eventually, because I've heard some good things about it for sure. So thanks for sharing those.
Absolutely, those are all terrific.
All right, so what do you remember about your first opportunity to coach when you get out on the floor? You said maybe your first opportunity was doing some AAU stuff. Is that right?
Yeah, I did some AAU stuff for high school. I went to in the summer, and then I went off to school, and I remember coming back, and as I was finishing up student teaching, watching those kids, and they had some success. So that was my first experience. And I actually got a head job pretty soon, pretty young. And I guess it was a lot of fun. You just kind of dive into it. I guess you look back and think about how much you didn't know, but you didn't know that you didn't know it.
Right.
Cause now I look back and go, man, we could have been a little more successful if I had a clue. But in my mind then, I was probably the best thing ever. Like I said, the older you get, you realize that, hey, I don't nearly know as much as I need to know. So, I better keep learning.
That's for sure. I know I've said this before on the podcast that, you know, if you'd asked 23-year-old Mike, hey, what kind of coach are you? I said, oh, I'm great. I know exactly what I'm doing. I've been playing for years and years, and I'm going to be a really good coach. And, you know, I don't need to do all this extra stuff and go to clinics and build relationships. And I was pretty much a man unto myself, thinking that I was going to be a really, really good coach. And if I look back on it now, just like you said, I had no idea what I didn't know. And now as a 49-year-old, I understand greatly how little I know about the game and how much there is to learn, not only about the X's and O's of basketball, but just about building culture and leadership and all the different things that we've been fortunate enough to talk to lots of great coaches on the podcast about. And so I think, yeah, it's a great point that you've made, is when you first start out, you're kind of flying blind and you have to figure it out. And nowadays, thankfully, we have lots of different ways to do that. And if you think of that first experience, what's one or two things that you can point to that you look back to that first head coaching job that you had and say, man, if I only would have known this, I would have done something different?
I think, you know, probably off the court a little bit was, if I had to go, then I'd go on the court. Off the court, I would say I felt like I had to like dislike every coach that I coached against. Like Coach Anderson was right down the street. So me and Coach Anderson text, and we talk now quite a bit, but it was like, I'm going to dislike this guy because he's really good and we're going to beat him. And I should have been just knocking on the door and saying, hey, man, can I come watch you practice? You've won about 700 games. So we've become friends, but I remember early on just thinking, man, I need to dislike this guy. So the idea that you need to dislike other people, I think it's so silly because you're all in this together. You know, that doesn't mean you're going to, you know, absolutely love being around every coach you're with, but majority of them got the same goals you do. And then I think the other thing is just varying, you know, learning about stuff you may not use because you may come back to it. You know, I run totally different stuff than I did when I started. And you know, you change your kind of, you know, I guess everybody has things that they do and that they're going to be about, but you kind of change those things. And, I think from a maybe philosophy standpoint, yeah, we want to play harder. We want to get loose balls. We want to do all those intangibles. We want our culture to beat their culture. At the same time, though, you're going to play good teams, and as a coach, you better know what you're doing to put your team in situations to win those games. So realizing I better be really, you know, really kind of hone my craft on some X's and O's and other things, because you're not going to always out-effort everybody. At some point, you're going to be able to need to do some of those other things.
For sure. All right, so let's go two parts to this question. Let's first take the X's and O's piece. So how do you, as a coach, how do you improve your X's and O's? What are some of your go-to sources, methods, people that when you're sitting there and saying, I got to figure out something to beat this next team, or I want to change something up, or we have a new set of personnel coming in next year, maybe we need to tweak a little bit of what we do. How do you go about doing that and changing and improving as an X's and O's coach?
Well, I think the first thing is go to clinic. I'm going to the clinic this Saturday. Actually, Coach Anderson's going. We text, so I could see him there. Fortunately, I don't have to play him anymore. But so, you know, I think going to those things, and I also think watching games, what do these people do? You know, the idea of me running a dribble drive when I first started. So I moved into that. So what I do, you know, you go read up or watch Vance Wahlberg. And I got to sit down with Coach Brotherton from the Village School out in Texas, and he said, hey, this is how we tweak it. So really just try to find people that do things that you say, hey, I don't have a post player, a prototypical post player, or I've got a really great point guard, or we don't shoot it well. Find people that fit those things that you do, and then try to find people that know about it and have done it. I sometimes think finding people like Coach Brotherton and other high school people is better than maybe some of the college guys and NBA guys. Not because those guys aren't brilliant. They are. But they have some dudes that we don't.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like going Coach K at Duke. I'm a big Duke fan, but they have a little bit more freedom because they've got five guys that are probably going to go to the NBA. They're going to get a little more freedom. So, you know, I want our players to have freedom, but also probably know we're going to need a little more structure than that.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you and I talked before we jumped on the podcast just about how, as you mentioned, that a lot of times just being able to interact with other high school coaches who may have similar personnel to what you have or maybe have been in a similar situation to you, sometimes that can be more valuable than going and listening to a Division I or an NBA coach do a clinic. Not that, again, their stuff isn't great, but it may not always be directly applicable to what the average high school coach faces and some of the challenges that, you know, an NBA or a Division I coach may not realize those same challenges that the average high school is going to see, you know, during the time when they're coaching.
Head Start Basketball's fall skill development clinics will be held at the Strongsville Rec Center on four consecutive Saturdays in October. These skill clinics will be from 4 to 6 p.m. beginning on October 5th. The skills clinics are for boys and girls in grades 1 through 8. If you're looking for a great way to get prepared for your season, sign up for the Head Start Basketball Fall Skill Development Clinics at www.headstartbasketball.com.
Now, the second part of that is you mentioned about trying to build a culture. So same question, but rather than focusing on how do you learn about the X's and O's, how do you go about learning more about the type of culture that you want to build from a standpoint of some of those intangible things and the pillars that you're going to build your program on? Obviously, you go into it with things that you believe are important, but as you're looking around, where do you go to find things or information that can help you to better build the type of culture that you're looking to have?
Well, I think, you know, one, I read a lot. I try to do that. I should read more, but I try to read a lot. I try to be around people. Coach Beard, the young guy at our school, I told you about, he's terrific. So what's he doing with baseball? And I try to find, you know, what are some local guys doing? But I, you know, also just try to write down everything. I loved Urban Meyer's Above the Line a few years back that he wrote. And you try to incorporate those. Coach Butler from Clemson had some stuff that we kind of stole this year at the clinic. We didn't steal it per se. We just tweaked it to what I wanted our program to be about versus some of the things she had hers about. And I think the biggest thing is everybody has a culture that they study, and they have some people they, you know, steal from or have some things that are on they even come up with. But I think the biggest thing we try to talk to our kids about, and I think some years, and as you build your program, you have more success. And I think the people that are able to really live their culture are able to have success at a much higher level. I think sometimes we make a T-shirt or we put a hashtag out or we do all this stuff, and it's really not anything more than what it is on that T-shirt. We can put it on that T-shirt, but that doesn't mean it's our culture. And just because we say it, that doesn't mean that's who we are. So really trying to live that. And as the older I've gotten, the more I realize that I've got to try to live that as well. You know, and try to, you know, really, I can't hold them to any different standards than myself. So, I think being authentic and really having a culture that you can grasp, that you can see, that you can feel instead of just a poster on the wall is important.
So what does that look like from your standpoint? So if you're living the culture there at Bunker Hill, what does that look like? What are the kids going to see you doing? What are some things that you're consciously, intentionally trying to do to get them to see that's going to help them to fit in and assimilate into the type of culture that you want to build? What are you doing day to day to make sure your kids are seeing from you that's going to add to your culture?
Well, I think whatever it is you do, you know, I'm going to be on time. Okay. I'm going to sweep the floor. I'm going to commit to, you know, change some things that we need to get done to make our program's facilities better. I have our girls have started kind of doing our ladies are doing a gratitude journal. I do mine every day. And I try to say, hey, you know, this is important enough for me to do it. It's important enough for you to do it. And honestly, we talk about, you know, hey, you know, we say we want three things in our culture right now. We want to be TUF, tough. So we're going to have trust. All right. We're going to be uncommon and we're going to fight. All right. Whether that's each other in practice at the end of the game, but we're going to fight for our culture, fight the other team, fight for every possession, however you want to define that. So we literally spend 3 weeks. We have what we've called the Breakfast of Champions. We meet every Tuesday morning and we literally go over what is trust, what is being uncommon look like, what is fight look like, and then we'll start building our standards. So really just trying to define it, what it looks like, talk about, you know, when somebody does that, hey, that's tough right there, or that's fight, or that's, you know, that's trust. So they really can understand it instead of it's just some vague thing that they say.
Yeah, that's awesome that you're able to recognize it and call it out. I think that's so important. I've said it before on the podcast that that's one of the things that I've always felt that I'm not very good at, is I'll get excited about something and we'll talk about it for a day, a week, 2 weeks, and then it'll kind of fade away because I'll be going after the next thing.
So when we went to Snow Valley, I got really excited about this rocket book thing that a few of the guys had. And I kept saying, I'm going to order one. And I haven't ordered one yet. So I live there.
It happens. Like the shiny things, I think, sometimes capture our attention. I think you made a great point there, Lee, about just making sure that whatever it is that you want the kids to do, to make sure that you're walking that walk every single day. Because when you do, then they do. And I have a question about, you mentioned the Tuesday breakfast. So talk a little bit more about that. Where you do them, how you do them, and then what some of the things are, what some of those discussions look like that you have with the kids on your team, and how that helps you to build the culture.
Well, 100% stole that from Coach Butler at Clemson. We have done stuff in the morning with various groups, whether it be something like FCA, or we've had our kids come in. We work out in the morning too, but I just decided that, hey, you know, that we got kids playing volleyball. So I want to get these kids to commit. I'm going to feed them every Tuesday morning. So far it's just been Bojangles. We might upgrade to like Chick-fil-A or something. So I try to feed them every Tuesday morning. And so we've been in school about, I guess, 3 weeks. So next week will be the fourth, and we'll be, so the first week I just introduced them. Okay. This is what we've talked about. This is what we're going to be about. So this coming Tuesday, we'll talk about fight. We'll define that. The following Tuesday, we'll talk about, we'll use the USA Gold standards as an example, and we'll send them a little bit of homework, and then they'll come in the next Tuesday and we'll start developing our own standards that we can put up and that we kind of hold ourselves to. And we'll just call those our tough standards. And, you know, I just think breakfast is a great way to do it. Also gives me a chance to sit around and talk with them a little bit, and get to know them. And I knew them pretty well, you know, before this, and I feel like we've got some good relationships and building some better ones. But I just think that's is a good setting. It's a way to get them in the classroom, because, you know, when the season goes around, you're always fucked with crunch for time. And I think you neglect some of that other stuff so you can get another baseline out of bounds play in or something like that. And I don't know that baseline out of bounds play is all that important if you don't have that other stuff.
I agree. I think that's one of the things that also has changed it in coaching, is people are starting to realize how important those intangible things and culture things are compared to spending more time, as you said, putting in one extra play. I think that the culture piece of it ends up being more important. So when you're doing the breakfast, you're having it in your classroom. You're just bringing in restaurant food, and all your girls are coming in to your classroom to sit with you. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm definitely not cooking. Probably not the reason they're coming. But yeah, we'll and I'll switch it up. But we come in about 30, 40 minutes before school starts. And they'll hitch rides and do things like that, make sure they get there. And they've done a good job of coming and being there on time, because it is early, because we start school at 7:30. So it's pretty early for those ladies, but they've done a good job. And I just I stole that straight up from Coach Butler. I can't really take any credit from that, but I guess, you know, here in a few years, I'll just be able to claim that it's mine.
Well, see, now you got to start doing clinics and sharing that yourself. And eventually, you know, for a first year or two, you just attribute it to her. And then after another year or two, you know, it slowly starts drifting away. And I can't remember where I learned that. And then eventually it's just Lee's.
That's right. That's right.
I think that's how it goes. So how many girls are you getting for a breakfast? Like how many kids in your program are you feeding every Tuesday morning?
We feed about, right now we've got 13. It's varsity only, and we'll have three kids. And, you know, we feel like those 13, we're not 100% locked in on our roster, but we feel like all 13 of those girls have a chance. So all 13 of those girls will definitely be part of the program. We have 13 in there. So we feed 13 every Tuesday.
That's awesome. You mentioned not only that idea, but you told me that you stole a couple other things. Can you share anything else that you stole from Coach Butler at Clemson that might benefit some other coaches out there?
I think you should say borrowed, Mike.
Borrowed? Okay, borrowed. All right, that you borrowed.
Well, I definitely...
Commandeered.
Yeah. I think the Breakfast of Champions was cool. You know, so I talked a little bit about, you know, we're going to have trust. We're going to be uncommon. We're going to fight. Ours was tough. Hers was trust, loyalty, commitment, their TLC, which was a pretty good acronym there, I thought. But she talked about, if you see them, they've kind of got theirs into their Clemson paw and shield. And I think she talked really a lot about, hey, not only is TLC, you know, if we want people in our program, they've got to be TLC. Are you TLC? So we're, you know, TUF. They're TLC, but she also talked about, I thought this was a great point. So, all right, we're going to protect people that are TLC. They're one of ours, but you don't want to be against us, all right, because that's how tight we are. And she did a great job explaining that, and I just thought she was great. And I'll be honest with you, I haven't spent as much time around the women because I've been on the men's side of the ball for some time and enjoyed that, and guys' basketball is great too. I was able to go to the women's portion of it. So it was neat to kind of see that.
So talk about that. This is a good point then to talk about that transition and maybe some of the differences between coaching on the boys' side and coaching on the girls' side. So talk about how the opportunity presented itself for you to take over the girls' program there at Bunker Hill. Talk a little bit about what you had been doing before, and then maybe let's get into some of the differences between what you found coaching the boys and the girls. Obviously, there's a lot of similarities, but as we know, there can definitely be some differences in terms of more of the culture side of things. So talk a little bit about that transition for you, how it came to be, and then maybe some of the difference between coaching on the male side and the female side.
Well, yeah, you know, I think more than, you know, I coach guys. So I've been with the guys for 4 years. We had a terrific year as far as success-wise. Probably, I think it was the highest finish that our basketball program had about 30 years. And we had some kids have some individual accomplishments. You know, I've got a daughter of my own. It's a little bit easier for her to be around girls. I've got a really good relationship with a lot of those girls on the team that I've built in the classroom. And I just thought, hey, this was a chance to I think it's a talented group. I think we have a chance to have some success here and kind of chase some things that you don't get to chase every year. Sometimes I think your success has got to be, hey, we're going to define what success is and not let other people do it. But I do think this is one of these years that from the outside looking in, people are going to say they've got a chance to be successful in how they define it. But I think it's been different because, you know, you're still seeing the kids you coach on the guy's side in the hallway, and you still love those kids. But you know, it's just a little bit different transition because now you're coaching the girls, but, it's a little bit different. The speed of the game is a little bit different. Probably the athleticism is a little bit different. I also say girls are probably a little bit better listeners. I'm not saying that as a crack of guys.
Jason raised his eyebrows, and I think I would probably tend to agree with you for sure.
100%. The last 2 years I've coached both middle school girls and boys, and it's not even a question.
Well, I'm not taking that. I'm sure I was not nearly as good a listener as most ladies when I was in high school. My wife probably agrees with that now. But you know, I think they're able, they want to do exactly like you ask and maybe even take it a little harder when they can't do it. But that doesn't mean, I think probably in my opinion, guys are maybe naturally a little bit more competitive. And I don't know if society teaches our girls not to be as competitive sometimes. I feel like I've got a competitive group. So I don't think it's something I'm really gonna have to harp on. But I think there are differences, and I think we'd be, naive not to consider those. And I've asked people, you know, I talked about Coach Brotherton, hey, what's the difference? One of the things he's talking about is don't ever embarrass a girl in front of her peers. So I've just kind of taken that advice, say I'm going to try never to do that. Not that I think embarrassing anybody is a good thing,
But I think we're naturally a little harder on guys, and I wouldn't want to ruin a relationship because I embarrassed a girl in front of a peer. So you kind of try to take those things and go.
So when you first took over there, what were one or two things that you looked at and said, okay, here's what we need to do to get where we want to go? What were the first couple things that were really on your radar that you said, I got to get these things going if we're going to get where we want to go? And again, defining success, however you want to define success. But what did you look at and say, here's what I want to do first to establish the kind of program here with the girls program at Bunker Hill that I want to have?
Well, I would say one, and like I said, I've been with them the summer. So we've never played our first official game other than we did go to South Carolina's team camp, which was a good experience. But there was probably two things I felt like. I thought, one, we needed to be a little more connected. I just didn't think that we were quite as connected. And that's from the outside looking in. And full disclosure, you know, they won 20 games last year. It wasn't like that they didn't have success or anything like that. It was a great year for them. But as we want to try to improve upon that, I thought we needed to be a little more connected. I think a lot of teams can say that. And maybe the bigger one, and this is the one we really talked on, I just didn't think we were quite tough enough. We didn't quite have the fight. We had a couple games against some really, really good teams. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from the teams that they were able to achieve in the state playoffs and things, but we were right there with them with a chance, and I thought we just weren't quite tough enough at crucial times. And a lot of that was mentally to quite get over that hump. And that's something I think the girls have in them. And so I'm excited to see that play out.
So how do you improve that? Like when you think about, okay, we're right on the cusp of being able to, let's say, finish that big game. And, you know, we came up a little short last year, and you're looking at your team and you say, just in general, maybe not even with this specific group, just if you think about how do we improve the mental toughness of our teams? Are there things that you've done in the past, maybe on the boys' side with teams, or things that you're kind of planning or thinking about as you head into this season that you can put in front of your team to maybe help them when they get in one of those tough situations that they're going to be able to rise to the occasion as opposed to maybe, you know, sink back and not come through in those big moments? Is there anything that you've done in the past or maybe you're thinking about trying this year to help them get over that hump?
Well, I think there's one, I would say, just from a principal standpoint, your practice habits are vital in what you're going to do when it's crunch time, what's going to happen when things get tough, because you're going to face adversity. If you can go ahead and face that in practice and you can build adversity into your practices and things, then I think you're at an advantage there. I'll tell you another thing we really talked about is just I don't care if it's something as simple as ball handling drills. If I got somebody coming in doing ball handling drills and they're never messing up, then we're not going very hard. Because I think the fear of failure sometimes, and I think we try to lose that in practice. Hey, it's okay to fail. We don't want to fail, but it's part of getting better, and being able to handle it is a big part because, hey, you know, it's late in the game, it's a close game, and you make a turnover. Like, we got to have a stop now. We got to get the ball back. And being tough enough to let that play go and stepping up and say, okay, I've been through this situation in practice. I've handled adversity. I've failed before. The next play. And just trying to build those things in practice. I think our practice habits could definitely get a little bit better. And I think our girls are aware of that. Those are things that they told me when we talked. So they want to fix those things and improve upon those things. Like I said, not that they were bad, but I always think you're looking to grow.
So are those things that you talk through, like, again, just going to the example that you shared with, you know, next play. So your team turns the ball over. There's 2 minutes left in the game. You're down by two. Now you got to dig in and get a defensive stop. Is that something where in practice you're putting them in those types of situations and then you're talking about it? Like, okay, here's what happened or here's what is happening. Now how do we react to that? Is that something that you're talking them through? Or are you more doing that in a practice floor setting in live action during practice? How would you say you're doing it more of?
Certainly we talk about it, but certainly as we move into the season and we do different things, hey, we've got to have a stop, a score, and a stop, or, you know, this is what we're looking for, or, hey, you know, you just turned the ball over, and I can see it on your face right now here in practice that you're not ready to go, or your teammate's going over here and encourage you, and you're still holding on to that last play. So we definitely put them in those situations and kind of talk about that. And
But I think it's important to talk about it into both. And I think even in the preseason before you get into conference play, you know, hey, in a timeout, hey, we're not being very tough right now. Right now we're not being, you know, we're not fighting for every possession. We're not doing X, Y, or Z. So I think the more you can let them see what it looks like, and I think the more you can put them in those positions in practice to kind of challenge them physically. You know, we want to play really, really fast. I know at South Carolina we had 8 kids that went and played, and really we probably got up and down the floor against much deeper teams. You know, one girl, I don't think she'd mind me sharing. She's a girl we're going to rely heavily on. She said, "Coach, I'm tired." And it was the only game we lost at team camp. Not that records matter at all at team camp, but you do play to win, like Herb Edwards said. But so she says, "I'm tired." And I said, "Hey, I'm going to need you to tough this out. We've got to have you right now on the floor." "Coach, I can't go." I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, I'm going to take you out." And I said, "You know, we really need you right now." And when she was there 10 seconds, she said, "Coach, I'm good." And I just said, "Nope. You told me you weren't good, so we're going to ride out these last 2 minutes of what we got out there." And we end up like blowing a lead and losing. And I'm not one player doesn't make it, but I certainly think our chances increased if she was out there. But I was able to take it to her. She did a phenomenal job of being coachable and listening and improving on that. I said, "You know, this is a teaching moment right here. See what happens when we're not tough. And see what happens when we don't show that little bit of extra grit and fight right there. Then, you know, it may be the difference in winning or losing." So I think anytime you can build chances to kind of give examples and lose. And we failed right there, but I think we learned, and that's a good place to learn.
Yeah, it's a great example. I mean, I don't think it gets any better than that, where you're in a situation where, as you said, the scoreboard doesn't really matter as much as any of us want to win. Losing a game at a team camp in the summer is probably a good place to lose one if you have to. And if that player was able to learn that lesson, and if her teammates were able to learn that lesson from her, it's always better to learn from somebody else's experiences sometimes than your own, so you don't have to go through that same you know, feeling of failure that, you know, sometimes we have when we make the mistakes ourselves. But if we can learn from someone else's mistakes, even better. So talk a little bit about how you go about your practice planning. What does practice planning look like for you when you are going through and making sure that you're going to get some of these things in that you want to get in?
Well, you know, I don't think we ever get in everything we want, but I try to be fairly detailed with it. It's something that we you know, are intentional about, I guess is the word I'm looking for. We'll open up, kind of have a routine of how we'll stretch. We'll obviously have our team stretch and how we do it, but, you know, we'll have our shooting and our ball handling, the things we do, skill development. We like to be fast paced. We try to never go more than 2 hours. We're going to build a little bit of everything into that. We're going to have a transition piece, and then we'll have, you know, it's funny, you'll find things you struggle with and build more time into those. But I probably spend, I don't know, a minimum of 45 minutes to an hour a day, at least building that practice plan, maybe more before the season starts. But then when you start watching the film, you have some other things that maybe take a little bit of that time. And obviously your principal still wants you to teach, so you don't have quite as much time as you do in the preseason to look at some of those things. But I do think those are important pieces. And in years past, we've had a basketball class that's been built into PE with strength, and we've had some of our guys. Hopefully we'll build that in our girls next year in the schedule. So you're able to do some things during PE to kind of relieve a little bit of some things, whether it's get some shots up or lift, some of those other things to kind of help you with your time management after school.
When you're planning your practices, do you keep each practice plan like in a 3-ring binder in a file on the computer? How do you go about going back and keeping track of your drills and the things that you do so that when you're pulling them out, you're like, "Oh, we need to work on this," or, "Hey, this is something that we want to try." Do you do that from memory, computer, notebooks, combination of? How do you go about where do you pull all your practice planning from?
Well, so, you know, one of the things that we do is this summer I made basically like a giant spreadsheet of every drill I think I've about ever done, whether it's offense, defense, transition, whatever you want to say. And kind of, you know, "Hey, I really like these. I've used these some." You know, one you maybe haven't done in a while, but you really like. So every practice plan is done on on a Word document, and then I'll print that out, and then I'll put it in a folder or like a binder and file it away. And then I'll edit from there every day and go back, but I still got those on file. So that's kind of how I do practice planning. You know, and then you write, you know, I've got, so time, drill, what's our focus? You know, if I want to put X's and O's for my assistant stuff, I'll draw those up on the back. I'm not as technological savvy. I do have fast model, but I still find myself drawing a lot by hand. So shout out to Doug that maybe I'll get more on his level and figure out how to put those on my practice plan instead of hand drawing them. But I do try to be organized in that regard. I think if you're not organized, you end up neglecting a lot of things.
Yeah, it's difficult. I think one of the things that I know I've said a few times is things that I struggle with. And that one of them that I always struggle with is having a name for my drills. So, you know, it's a lot easier if you can just say, hey, let's get into block shooting. And everybody knows what block shooting is, as opposed to, all right, we're going to do that drill where we have three lines over here and this. And then, you know, you end up wasting, you know, a minute and a half or 2 minutes of your practice time, where if your drill was just named, you're right into it. So is that something that you've been able to do, is give your drills names? So your kids, obviously the girls this year are going to, you know, have to learn your terminology and systems and that kind of thing. But in the past, have you had, are your drills named so that your kids can just jump into them right away and you're just calling out, hey, we're doing this drill?
Most of them are, you know, like we call it Duke shooting, or, you know, we're going to go 4-15 and basically go full court, three man weave into two shots and a lay in, or we'll have NBA transition, where, you know, it's continuous fast break, you know, 2-on-1, 3-on-2, 4-on-3, or we'll have, you know, Belmont closeouts, something we kind of picked up from the academy last year with Coach Shulman. So yeah, we, for the most part, everything we have is named. We try to do a good job of that, but sure, I have things I'm like, we're gonna do this defensive rebounding drill, so, maybe I need to come up with a better name, and sometimes, but I try to name them. And here's what's bad when you're talking about getting organized. You go back and look at some of your old stuff, like, man, that's the Clemson drill. Now I've got a new Clemson drill. I've got to change one of the names. So
for sure. Yeah. I do that all the time. Or like you'll have a drill that'll start out as one thing, and as you're going through it, you'll tweak it and you'll do something different with it. And then maybe, like, I do this all the time, because I'm kind of, as I'm doing a drill, I'm in my head, I got a bunch of things going on, and I'm, all right, I can make it better by doing this. But then if I don't intentionally go back after that practice and write it down and say, okay, here's how I change that, or, you know, and then the next time you go to the drill, the kids are like, well, what version are you talking about, coach? Cause I've already, you know, you've changed it to this or that, or we've added a defense, or, you know, boy, there's, if we just had a passer here, it would make it so much better. And that's one of the things that I always find to be challenging, especially in the way that, I mean, I haven't coached at the high school level now for 8 or 9 years, but coaching my own kids in AAU. So it's not, I don't have the same amount of practice time as you do as a high school coach. So we're maybe practicing twice a week for, you know, an hour and 15, hour and 30 minutes. And then, you know, again, I'm doing my regular job, as you said, and then family and all the other things that we do. And so sometimes, you know, a practice will end and, you know, I'm not always writing it down. Then I'll go back and like, oh, I wish I would have remembered that drill. I really liked it, but now I can't remember exactly how I tweaked it or changed it. I think that's something that all coaches probably run into. And I know that's something that I sometimes struggle with. The point here is, the more organized you can be as a coach, and the more you can define your drills, name them, define how you do things from transitioning from one drill to another, the smoother your practice is going to run, and the more benefit you're going to get out of it, the more organized you are. And I don't think there's any doubt that that's the case.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
So if you're looking at your season this year, let me ask you, I guess it's a two-part question again. One is, what do you see as your team's biggest challenge going into the season? And then let's take the opposite of that. What do you think your team, just looking at them now, what do you think is going to be something that they're going to be really good at, that they're going to hang their hat on as you go through the season?
I would say probably we're not. And not that necessarily everybody does, although there is a couple people with some really good post players, but we're not necessarily big. We don't have a ton of size. So I think competing inside, rebounding, is something that we're really going to have to focus on doing that as a team. Our guards are going to have to help out, and our posts, the defend the posts, are going to have to do a good job of going and finding somebody, putting a body on them, going to get it. But I would say that was probably the thing that, we've got to definitely get better at. I would say the things that we're going to be able to do, I feel like we're going to be able to score the basketball pretty well. Or like we're going to be able to run the floor. I feel like we've got some pretty good depth. So all those things kind of equate. You know, I feel like at the point guard position, we're, I don't know, maybe elite there, along with some players around her and some people that can put the ball in the basket. So those would probably be what I would say are two things, one that we feel good about, maybe two there, and then one that we need to make sure we're really locked in on.
Yeah, and I think as you go into the season, you'll find out as a, you know, as a first-year coach, you know, you're always in. You had the opportunity, obviously, to watch those girls play a little bit from afar last year and not necessarily being on the inside. So you had some idea, not coming in completely blind. So you have some idea of what they can and can't do, and you're getting to know them a lot better here as you've gone through the summer and into your preseason heading into the winter. And so as you get prepared for that first season, it's got to be exciting to see what all the plans and all the things that you've kind of put together here over the last couple months. It's going to be exciting for you to see it come to fruition once you can step out on the floor come November, December, and see what you know, see what you have for sure. It's going to be exciting. Let's jump from what you're doing there at Bunker Hill. Let's talk a little bit about how you got connected to the Jay Billis camp, how you got there, and then just let's talk a little bit about our collective experiences there. And I know you've been there at least a couple years more than I have, since I was this is only my first year going down. But talk a little bit about how you got connected with it, what you like about it, what you've taken away from it as a high school coach, and what makes it such a unique place.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the best skill development camp for coaches, I guess maybe a coaches development board I'm looking for. It's terrific for campers as well. I would highly recommend any guy that's wanting to go to the next level or even just get better to go to it. But for coaches, I think it's great. You know, I think one, relationships is definitely the biggest one, because I've been able to make some that made me a better coach I've been able to reach out to. I think if you're younger and maybe you're looking to move up in the profession, it's great. Coach Bestie, who's at Queens now, was you know, he's just found a job, and there's been some other guys that have found jobs through there and working hard. So I think there, but also just think the amount of, you know, you don't really get to be in a room with, you know, 30 coaches and talk to Alan Stein or Coach Dunlap or Coach Showalter, or, you know, just pull those guys to the side or get their emails or, you know, and have kind of a more personal relationship. So I just think it's a unique thing to do. A funny story is I kind of got caught up. I kind of saw it online, saw it on Twitter. Twitter is like the only real social media I use. And I saw it, and I'm like, man, I think I'm going to go to this. Like, I think I'll just see what this is about. And I was like, man, I'm probably going to be the oldest dude there. And I was probably close, even though I wasn't that old, or I don't consider myself that old. But we go in there, and Coach Dunlap has paid, and his staff is there, and he's there in the same program. And now, this year he spoke, because obviously he's good enough to do that. But it was just like humbling, like, yeah, you were worried about being old. Here's, you know, former NBA coach. He's in the same thing. It doesn't. So, you know, it was neat to kind of realize that, hey, man, we're all just trying to figure this thing out the same.
Yeah, I think what makes it really unique and what I really enjoyed about it, and although I was just there strictly as an observer, so I didn't get to get out and coach very much on the floor. I got to do one or two things when everybody else was tied up with some of the great programming that they had. And I know the one time I was out there with Jay and Paul Biancardi and John Searby, and we were running the kids through some drills while everybody else was up in one of the programs. But one of the things that makes it so unique, and it was something that for me to be able to see it for the first time this summer, was just, I've never been to a camp, and, you know, I've been around camps for a long, long time, where the kids go and eat and the coaches don't go with them to the cafeteria. Instead, the coaches go to a meeting room and there's coach education going on. So while you're eating your sandwich from Jimmy John's or Panera, you're getting the opportunity to listen to some great, great coaches from all different levels of the game. Like you said, with Coach Dunlap, who coached in the NBA and is now at Loyola Marymount, and Wes Miller and, you know, Alan Stein and Coach Showalter, obviously had a chance to talk there, and just some of the just great people that came through. It was amazing to just sit in that room with, as you said, all those other coaches mostly young guys who are looking to move up in the profession, and just the quality of individuals they were exposed to. I've never seen anything like that. And to me, that was really where the value from a coaching standpoint, I don't think you can get that really anywhere else, that ability to interact, because there was just so much time for interaction. That's what I loved about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's what's neat about it. If I never eat a Jimmy John sandwich again, yeah, at least Coach Coleman did a good thing, and he actually got us something to drink this year during lunch, so we'll pump him up for being better there. But I think definitely the educational part of, you know, learning about the game, building relationships there, getting to see people really enjoying their success when you see them on Twitter or social media, and you know that guy was beside you, picking their brain, looking at the stuff they post, the stuff they're reading. I just think it all goes into making you a better coach. I also think you are appreciative when you see that success. You know, those guys have put the work in, and they're reaping it, and I think they're still the same way about you. And most of the people that get into Bills and figure out what it's about and kind of see it, they keep coming back. You know, one, I think the relationships is a big part of it. But two, it's just really good. I mean, who couldn't sit in a room and listen to Alan Stein or Don Showalter or Dunlap or even Jay Billis? I mean, Jay's phenomenal. And what a nice guy. I mean, you see him on TV and he's pretty funny and stuff, but just really down to earth. You know, another thing separates that is like Coach Billis, Jay, he's at that camp all day. He doesn't put his name on it and then leave. I mean, he literally works the camp. So I think that's important.
Yeah, it's very important. One of the things that I had no idea going into it, and it's sort of amazing, is that he opens up his home to the entire coaching staff the night before the players get there. And that was one of those experiences that I certainly wasn't expecting when I went down there. And again, to your point of him just being a great guy, a guy who's down to earth, when you open up your home, and I know that I got to spend that night. I sat and ate dinner with Coach Showalter, and that was the first time he and I had met in person. We had done a podcast together and talked at various points on the phone and then texted before, but we had never sat down and talked face to face. So that was super enjoyable. And then I just kind of went roamed that night through Jay's house from person to person, talking to just a wide array of people. And I think not only, you know, you mentioned some of the speakers that came in to talk to the group, which were outstanding. But I think you also said how important it is to build those relationships with the people who were part of that development program. And as you said, the year before, not this past summer, but the summer before, you know, Coach Dunlap was actually part of the coach's development program as opposed to being a speaker. So as you said, here's an NBA coach who's sitting right next to the guy who might be you know, director of basketball operations or might be a student manager at a college. And it's kind of amazing that all those people are in the same room together. And then not only you're getting to hear the speakers, but you're getting to have that interaction between the coaches, and those conversations that you get a chance to have are just, you know, are incredible. And then from a player standpoint, I don't think there's any camp in the country where the player to coach ratio is basically, you know, two coaches for every one play, you know, two players for every one coach. It's pretty incredible. And I think when you get an opportunity to see what that looks like from, you know, just a camp agenda standpoint and the things that you can do, whether it's coaching a team or working the stations or going through breakdown work, when you have that many eyes on you as a player, it just gives you an opportunity to be coached by some really good and smart people. And there's a lot of eyeballs on you that can help you to improve and get better. And then from a coaching standpoint, not only are you building those relationships as you're walking to and from the dorm or you're sitting in those meetings, but when you're out there on the floor, you get to watch lots of other great coaches and how they explain things and how they look at it. And I know even as I was kind of walking around just observing, I picked up one or two terminology things that I had never heard something explained exactly that way. One of the things that I picked up from Jason Zimmerman from Emory, I don't know if you remember this, but he talked about racing the lanes instead of running the lanes. And I thought that was, you know, just phenomenal. I'd never heard anybody say that, but as soon as he said it, I'm like, oh, that makes total sense. I'm going to steal that with my team for sure. Because
hey, he didn't come up with that. Just so you know, I came up with that because that's what we're using. So, nice. I've had it for 2 years now, so it's no longer his. It's mine now since I
started. Perfect. All right. So from now on, it's Lee Swanson's credit. No, I'm not referring to Jason Zimmerman anymore. Sorry, Jason. We stole
the exact same thing. Running the street, win the first two steps. It's a race. So the same things you picked up from him were so good. We stole. We talk about it with our kids. It's funny that you said that because we stole the exact same thing.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I had never heard anybody express it that way, and I just thought it made complete sense. And sometimes, you know, it's something like that that once you hear it, you're like, oh man, that is so obvious. How come I hadn't heard that before? How come I hadn't thought of that? And I think as coaches, that's the value in going to a place like, you know, Jay Billis, or going to the opportunity we talked before about. Jason and I got to go to Snow Valley this year. And it's the same thing. The quality of the coaches, the quality of the people at those two places is second to none. And I think whether you're a coach or you're a kid who's looking to be a good basketball player, you cannot go wrong putting your money down and going to one of those two camps. You're going to get a lot out of it and have just a tremendous, tremendous experience. Lee, before we start to wrap up, I want to give you a chance to share how people can reach out to you, share your contact information. Then if there's anything that we didn't touch on tonight that you want to share before we wrap up the episode, you can go ahead and do that, and then we'll come back and wrap it all up.
Absolutely. First of all, thank you guys for having me. I feel, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for here, that there's plenty of other guests that could offer a whole lot more, but nevertheless, I appreciate the opportunity. My cell phone number, 828-308-8261. You can text me, call me anytime. I'll try to get back with your answer. Email is lee_swanson@catawbaschools.net. I usually check that pretty frequently within the hour. You know how today's world is. Twitter @CoachSwansonBH. I don't tweet as much as I used to, but I do try to put, you know, things out about our program, things that we're doing pretty frequently. So anytime I can help somebody, I think I've learned a lot in the last 10, 11 years I've done it. Made a lot of the same mistakes that young coaches make. I think you know it all, and then you realize you don't, and that's when you really start working to kind of achieve some of the things you want to do. And I just think that basketball is a cool sport, brings a lot of people together. It's a place where, you know, everybody kind of has a common goal and can be on the same page. And there's in a world of a lot of maybe narcissism and individuality, I think basketball is a deep place still for people to try to accomplish things together.
Absolutely. Well said, Lee. That's fantastic. That's a great way to wrap it up. We can't thank you enough for jumping on with us. It was kind of short notice. We got on with you today and had somebody that couldn't make it onto the show with us. And so we appreciate you getting an opportunity to come on with us. It was great hanging out with you down at Jay Billis, and we're glad we had an opportunity to have you on the show with us today. And I think you're short selling yourself as far as the value that you were able to provide. I think there was a lot of great things that you shared that any coach who is listening is going to be able to pull out some stuff that can help them to make their program a better place for them and their kids. So again, we can't thank you enough for spending some time with us tonight. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have 4 different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.